Welcome to the Weekend News Roundtable. It's May 16, 2009. On today's show, we talk with a caller who has experienced life in solitary confinement for extended lengths of time while he was in prison. He is now out of prison, intends to remain that way. His tale should be a very cautionary tale for all of us when it comes to torture in Maine State Prison. Let's start off with an excerpt from Room Full of Mirrors by Jimi Hendrix. Take it away, James. Mirrors. You know, we all live in sort of rooms full of mirrors of our own, always thinking of ourselves and what's good for ourselves. But the point of this show, the Weekend News Roundtable, is to turn that table around and have you look at others. Look at those, in fact, the least of ours. I think doubtless somewhere in the Gospels or the letters of Paul. Paul wrote a zillion letters. Somebody says, go and take care of those who are incarcerated. Make sure they don't just starve and are abused to death and all that. And so that's part of the purpose of this show, is to make sure that those who are behind bars, that are jailed for whatever reason, doesn't matter how heinous, they're still human beings, they're still probably Mainers, and they're still liable to human rights. I don't care if they're the worst of the worst of the worst, or the worst of the worst of the worst of the worst. They still have the right to be treated humanely. How else to make them to be the best of the best? The hunger strike, you know, of this collective group of inmates being held in sensory deprivation cells, which is a feat John McCain would tip his hat to, has done things. Now, hold on a second here. We have a call. Stand by. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hi. I was calling to make some remarks about the sensory deprivation that's been going on across our nation.
Excellent. Please, go right ahead.
I was trying to make it to the Maine State Prison today to show solidarity with the guys that were on the hunger strike because of their treatment there. And I was just curious about how many people were actually going to turn out. And the reality of it was that I was thinking that it probably wouldn't be that many, because so many people in our country are either unwilling to acknowledge or uninterested in discovering the reality of how people that are incarcerated being treated.
Well, that's very true, and in fact, that's what much of my show this and last hour was about, was the fact that the best coverage they can get just sort of looks at, in this case, for example, just the horse race. Who's going to give in first, the prison or the hunger strikers? That's all they cared about. They didn't care about why.
And it's just, that seems to be reflective of our value system in our country. We seem to be moving away from a country that was supposed to have been interested in the rights of all of our citizenry, and striving to at least become that way, and to make all of society inclusive, and not to marginalize certain people in our society and kind of relegate them to inhumane treatment. I have been incarcerated for a number of years myself, and spent at least half of that time in solitary confinement. And I know how it affects you. You know, there were times where the ventilation system was going, and I would think that somebody was talking through the ventilation system because it was just white noise, something that I didn't know about at the time. But later on, after incarceration, discovered that it's a form of your mind basically playing tricks on you because of your setting. They would have extremely cold air for 2 years straight. They didn't even let me outside to see the sunlight. They would only let me outside at night.
The caller has dropped off. We will catch up with the caller again here in just a moment. Please call back. And so we had a caller on the air there he got cut off probably by being on a cell phone. So let's presume he will call back. Call back, caller, when you can hear. And until he calls back, you will see. By the way, that caller, whoever it was, has spent time in solitary, has seen what a dreadful, dreadful thing it is, and has come out on the other side, and like many people who have been victims of terrific injustice, has decided to become a crusader to end that injustice, which is a finest kind thing to do. And inmates carry out a similar hunger strike in 2006 when the wretched conditions in the hole like that. Let's go back to our caller again. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yes, I called a few minutes ago.
Okay, well, I was just mentioning that quite a few people have gone through this, and some, like Mike James, drove him about quite insane by being stuck in solitary.
Right. It does happen to a lot of people. I really couldn't tell you how that didn't happen to me. I have recognized in a lot of ways in which it has affected me, and people that I know, my friends have said the same thing, and they're like, we can tell that this is something that's happened to you while you're in prison. One of the things, man, that a lot of people will say that I have a distance about me that comes across as being cold.
Hmm.
And when you're put into situations where you aren't able to be social for long, extended periods of time, how do people in society think you're going to get out and respond to society? It's just not going to work. It's not going to work right. And as a result, because the people seem to be a little distant or what have you, they become marginalized because people feel uncomfortable around them. Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you think that part of the entire exit strategy for inmates that are, say, in their last year of sentence to go through counseling to be able to reintegrate back into the world when they're finally let out?
I think that one of the things that would have been most instrumental for reintegration in most cases,
mm-hmm,
would have been for some sort of mentor to have been established that was corresponding with a person and trying to get them a support system ready for when they're coming back out into the community. Because one of the things I've encountered is that you have a lot of people that you don't have a lot. You have a few people that are genuinely interested in trying to help you get back together on your feet, and will open up their home to you and spend money out of their pocket without saying, oh, you have to pay me this back. But understanding that this person doesn't have anything, it's not like they were, you know, whatever the case that got them into prison, society has to understand that society has some responsibility in that. And once we do that, once we can get to that part, then we can be more willing to spend our resources to help reintegrate people back into society. But I think that the mentorship is especially important because I've seen it work in places.
Now, I understand that that takes place to some extent with some of the jails.
It does, across the nation. And it's usually in communities that are more interested in prisoner rights. Like, I'll give you... you may have heard of a Fortune Society in New York. They actually bought a building, and what they do is they bought a building, they correspond with people in prison, and they interview them, essentially. Would you be interested in being a part of our program? And they bring them into a home, job placement. They have people set up in the community that will help the guys get jobs. And they've had a nice success rate. They've only been with people that are genuinely interested in getting back to society.
And yet, I'm sure there are quite a few. I mean, the challenge we have of the prison system saying, well, these are, you know, the worst of the worst and all that. It pollutes the minds, I think, of many citizens. But organizations like what you're talking about rehumanize.
Right, right. Once you can get into a realm of dehumanizing the people in prisons, it becomes easier to exploit them because they're no longer, it was the same mentality with slavery. Once you were able to dehumanize, then it was better able to treat people like chattel. So it's the same sort of mentality. It's just acted out. Frederick Douglass said something really interesting, and he said that slavery has had many interesting names that it's given itself. It's called itself the peculiar institution. It's called itself this. It's called itself that. And he said that it's up to us to be vigilant and recognize it when it appears again and gives itself another name.
Well, do you think that's what has happened? I mean, it certainly seems that inmates have less rights than other citizens in a lot of ways, not just merely by the fact of being incarcerated.
I think that since I've been out, I've experienced a lot of discrimination in the job market. I've been just, there's a lot of school in Mexico that told me that a motorcycle mechanic school said that I couldn't go to school there because I have a criminal record. And I have a victimless crime, marijuana.
And yet, at the same time, somehow because you're now a ex-con or whatever the word is they use nowadays, that somehow there's this certain tinge to you, and not even to fix motorcycles?
I couldn't even go to a motorcycle mechanic. I finally got situated where I could get financial aid again from government middle school, thanks to our new presidency. But when I tried to apply at this school, they gave me this thing about, well, this, and they, do you have a criminal record? And I was like, yeah, and they were like, well, what is it? And I said, well, let's start here. Why don't you tell me what sort of felons do you not allow in your school, you know, if I fall in that category? Well, she got to name me and off the whole gamut. So I was like, so basically you guys don't allow felons in your school because that's pretty much anything anyone could do. And she's like, oh, no, there isn't any exceptions. You guys are basically discriminating. So it's like even when you have a desire, there's all these obstacles set up, and it makes it so I can see why so many people are recidivists. I can see it. If I didn't have some of the support that I have, I probably would be.
I call your book up again there, but maybe back. We're listening.
I appreciate your program, and I appreciate what you're doing to bring about awareness because it's really necessary because we are having a very large population of people in prison. We have enough people in prison across the nation now to populate the entire state of Maine. So these people largely will be coming back into our society, and we're going to have to do something. We already are dealing with economic crisis, we're dealing with healthcare crisis, and now we're dealing with a growing prison population crisis of how to deal with people as they come back into our society.
All right, you're breaking up again there, but you can see his point, listeners, and that is that we want prisons to decrease in population, not increase, not stay stable. A prison is a sign of a failure of our system, a breakdown of our system.
Right.
And so the main thing is, as a most important point that you've raised there is utter necessity for some kind of transition program so that people can get out, not only learning how to break that distance challenge that you had, the psychological distance that one learns as sort of a survival trait in prison, but also how to get past this entire, you're just not employable because after all, you were, you know, you've served your time.
Right. And you want to be able, you know, the double standard in that too, from another perspective is that, okay, you don't want me, you want to take my taxes, but I can't, you know, I've encountered renting places that won't rent to you. Doesn't matter what type of felon it is. Doesn't matter if it's a marijuana charge. It's just the fact that you're a felon. So you're in a situation where your taxes won't be collected from you, but you'll be shunned in a lot of other areas of your society that this is supposed to be your country.
Doesn't make a whole lot of sense, and I hope that, I mean, like these guys sticking their necks out, I have no idea what's going to happen to the hunger strikers. You know, once the media just about gave them no attention anyway. Once there was no violence at the end, they got bored and went away.
Right.
And I wouldn't be surprised if some of these folks are threatened with being exiled and otherwise punished for not eating.
I'm sure that's all part of it. Some institutions even have it situated where if you do hunger strike, they have a right to feed you through the veins. So they have instruments in which they will use when things get dire, in their opinion. That's to try to break up the struggle. And, I'm with those guys 100% because I've been there and I've experienced that and we tried different remedies to get the systems to change. But what we discovered is that we couldn't get the system to change internally, to the overall liking of the population.
Right.
Unless we had people on the streets that were actively united with us, agitating the administrations.
All right. Well, look, we have lost our caller again here. You can call back if you'd like. I really want to thank you for the call. I'm going to hang it up there, but call 593-0013 if you'd like to be on the air here on the Weekend News Roundtable. It's time for us to bail on out of here. And thank you very much for calling in, caller, because that was very important that people hear from somebody who has served time just how demeaning and how awful solitary confinement is.